Your patient has gas, and you gave it to them. We begin our podcast right there.
Computers are live. Mixers up. Levels are good. Equalizers good. Ready channels 1 and 2. Mic is live in 3, 2, 1. Roll it. Welcome, listeners, to the My Practice, My Business podcast, where we teach dentists and their teams how to reclaim forgotten profitability in dentistry with our clinical business of dentistry training. And now, the host of our show, the clinical director at My Practice, My Business, Dr. Rob Thorup.
How many of you charge for nitrous oxide and oxygen for your patients? How many of you give it to them for free? Oh, I know that many of you know where I'm going with this conversation, but you might be surprised how I get there. I was watching the conversation between several office managers on one of the dental networking groups and saw that about 35% of the respondents had offices that charged for nitrous. I let my mind wander back to my EMS days of working in the emergency room while in undergraduate school. And then again, after graduating and moving to a small town to live where I volunteered with their EMS services, do I dare say that the emergency rooms where we delivered customers to our fancy, with our fancy vehicle with bright, shiny, flashing lights, charged for their nitrous oxide and oxygen? I've even seen medical Instacare facilities place nitrous oxide on patients with broken bones, and they charge for it. Whoa, what a concept. Now, why on earth would they do such a thing? How come they don't have nurses who just give it away for free? Where are their front office team members who have the power and authority to write it off as a courtesy? Maybe it's because people with business degrees run those facilities. Maybe it's because they actually look at what it costs to deliver nitrous oxide and oxygen to their patients. Maybe it's because they value the services they provide their patients and they want to be paid for them. They don't have it become a lost leader. Hey docs, hygienists, do you remember your physiology and pharmacology classes you had in dental school and hygiene school? Hey docs, remember the training you got pounded into your head of that bell-shaped curve when dealing with LD50s? You know, the lethal dose for 50% of the population for a particular drug? And then there's my favorite, how the bell-shaped curve actually does represent those ultra-sensitive people who only need a small dose of a drug to put them over the edge. Let me tell you a fun story about Angie, who nearly put me over the edge. Angie, at the time, was a 26-year-old female patient who I diagnosed with 3 areas of decay. She needed 1 simple occlusal and 2 back-to-back, 2 surface composite fills, right? MODO. They were her first cavities on permanent teeth that she had ever needed since having baby teeth. It was a morning appointment. She had eaten breakfast, gotten a good night's sleep, and was ready for her dental experience. The only problem that she told us about was her apprehension and fear of visiting us that day. I explained to her that our office is the happiest place on earth, right next to Disneyland, and that there was nothing to be scared or anxious about. She mentioned Space Mountain scares her, and I told her we are more like storybook land, where once you get past riding into the scary mouth of the well, you're filled with happy thoughts and wonderful little stories. She asked if she might try laughing gas instead, as her neighbor had tried. She'd tried it on her dental visit, and it really did give her happy thoughts and dreamy stories. And I thought to myself, well, that's an excellent talking point. I'm going to start using that one. Anyway, So thanks to the neighbor who visited her dentist, Angie's like, hey, let me have some of that laughing gas. And so after explaining to Angie the costs for nitrous oxide and oxygen and getting her consent to proceed, I told my assistant to start hooking Angie up to the happiest place on earth gas. And she began our standard protocols, which were one, turning on the tanks, two oxygen, one nitrous, and confirming their levels of pressure. Two, turning on the monitor that checks the levels of pressure and flow and alerts us if any tanks are running low. Three, fitting the patient with a disposable nasal cannula. Four, confirming the scavenger is on and operational. Five, placing a pulse oximeter onto the patient's finger to monitor heart rate and oxygen saturation. Six, begin oxygen flow at 2 liters and nitrous oxide at 40% on our lovely Porter nitrous oxide system there. And seven, never leave the room while continually monitoring the patient. Those are our protocols, okay? Sounds like your protocols, right? Everybody's protocols, I would hope. After 5 minutes of sniffing the gas and bumping the flow up to 50%, I anesthetized our nervous little patient, who wasn't as nervous now, and both the assistant and I stayed with her, okay? We just waited for her to go numb. And another 5 minutes passed by with everything going like clockwork. Drilling was now complete after another 5 to 6 minutes, and I was ready to fill. You know, just a typical day in the world of dentistry, following the same protocols that I've followed forever and that you normally do on every patient, right? So suddenly, her heart rate increased and then began to decrease. Oxygen saturation levels began to fall. This little poo head tried to stop breathing on me. Two things she had mentioned to me during my question and answer period prior to applying the nitrous oxide was this. She had never had nitrous before, and her physician always erred on the side of giving her the lowest doses of medications because she seemed to easily react to them. Oh, and I should mention, she was a redhead. Okay, end of story. My youngest is a redhead, so I can go there. So I quickly shut off the nitrous, bumped up the oxygen, and I began positive pressure-assisted breathing for her because her respiratory rate was decreased too. My experience being in emergency medical services all those years became priceless at that moment. I've breathed for patients, intubated, shocked a few, so it was like, oh, another day in the office, out of the office, okay? After nearly a minute, she opened up her eyes and became completely responsive again. I explained to her what had happened, and she warmly said, I told you I might be extra sensitive to the gas. What a great patient, and it was amazing. In our office, we have protocols, all right? And I hope all of you do, too, for emergencies. I canceled the 911 call, finished the procedure, made absolutely sure that she was fine before leaving our office, and everyone was happy. Well, except for the fire department around the corner from us, it would always suck when we'd be en route to a call and get a 1022 over the radio. That meant to disregard the call and return to station. It's like setting a tee time on Monday for golf on Friday, and the weather changes from sunshine to snow. No play time. So yeah, I'm sure those guys were bummed out, but. Yes, we did call 911 as soon as we saw her respiratory rate going down and her level of consciousness dropping. Well, I had no idea, exactly what was going on. So it's better to get EMS en route and have that support than to not. So I just want you guys to think that one through too. So why did Angie react the way she did to simple laughing gas that we give away for free in our offices after checking everything in our nitrous and oxygen lines and after making sure she hadn't had any legal or illegal medications on board prior to arriving at our office, which I knew she had not based upon her speech and appearance that morning because I'm constantly profiling every patient every day. It's just part of my other training. And taking into account her medical history, I determined she was one of those wonderful patients who simply fall on the ultrasensitive side of the bell-shaped curve. Now that the seriousness of the situation is over, let's have some fun. How much does it cost to rent your nitrous and oxygen tanks each month? How much does it cost to have them filled? How much did the plumbing cost? How much did the flow regulators cost? Do you have one in each operatory? What about your pulse oximeter? Do you use disposable nasal cannulas? Or I should say nasal masks. If not, how much does it cost to clean the reusable ones that you have? You know, not just the solutions, but the time it takes for the assistant to clean them. Now, most important, Doc, how much did it cost you to learn how to keep someone alive if they happen to be on the wrong end of the bell-shaped curve? Do you really believe laughing gas should be given away as a courtesy to your patients? Really? Do you really think so? Our problem in dentistry is being caregivers to those who entrust their oral health care to us is not one of altruism. It's not one of helping out the needy, especially when they're deserving of our help because of circumstances beyond their control. Dentists and their teams are some of the most giving and caring people I've ever seen in the world. I love our profession. Our problem, though, is conditioning our patients and their insurance providers into taking advantage of our good nature. That's what we have seen in Utah for umpteen years. It's giving away billable services constantly and then wondering why insurance companies expect or demand us to bundle our services with others as if it's something that should be normal operating procedures in our billable charges. Why do you think acid etch and bonding used to have its own code to go along with composite fills, and now it's gone? I bet many of you who haven't been practicing dentistry that long never even knew that existed, but it did back in the day. Why do you think third-party payers are trying to get us to bundle buildups with crowns? Why do EOB's state anesthetic should be included with all procedures when back in the day it was not? Should I mention periodontal probing, the bundling of x-rays, and the inclusion of sutures with extractions? Boom. Bottom line is when dental team members proudly state in the networking groups that their offices give away nitrous as a courtesy or that they make it free to the patient to keep them happy and peaceful during their procedures, what they are really doing is setting the expectation of free dentistry to their patients, and don't think insurance companies don't see it. That's right, people. Your patients will happily take free stuff from you, and it will be expected, and the insurance companies will start expecting it too. What you are really doing is cheapening your skills and the doctor's skills and shortchanging every dental team member in your office. Think about that, Doc. At least that's what really smart business people have taught me through the years. I hope after this information presented today, you will stop giving the dental insurance companies the excuses they are looking for to not cover and pay for the services you provide. And dare I say, the codes, descriptions, and fees that are clearly seen on the contracts we sign. I honestly hope you understand that patients quickly stop appreciating nice gestures when they become common expectations. When you give away your services thinking that your patients appreciate it because they usually do not, I hope you'll place value in your skills and training. Most importantly, Doc, I hope you understand that when you and your staff give your services away as a courtesy, that it directly comes out of your pocket and directly comes out of theirs the next time they ask for a raise. Ponder that business concept the next time you say, "It's free." Thank you so much for tuning into the My Practice, My Business podcast. You can find additional podcasts you may have missed that will help you with your dental practice at Apple iTunes Podcasts. And remember to become a subscriber to our podcast. Many of you have asked, how to help support the My Practice, My Business podcast. If you have enjoyed the program and information you received today, the best way to help is to leave us a 5-star review. Thanks again for allowing us to be a part of your day.